On Sunday Evenings by Ian Skelly. We're back in the UK for tomorrow night's concert, which was given at the Bridgewater Hall in Manchester last Thursday by the Halle Orchestra, conducted by Mark Elder. Just two composers in their programme, Verdi in the first half, scenes from his opera Macbeth, and then in part two, the Symphony No. 9 by Beethoven. Adam Tomlinson presents in concert tomorrow at the usual time, 7:30.
On BBC Four.
This butterfly, which came from a caterpillar we picked up in Morocco, has never flown before, and we're just going to let it go.
A power of butterfly must be the aptitude to fly. Meadows of majesty concedes, and easy sweeps of sky.
The painted lady is just 6 centimetres wide, but these tiny travellers are completing the longest journey of any insect on the planet.
Martha Carney presents The Great Butterfly Adventure, Africa to Britain with the Painted Lady, tomorrow night at 9 on BBC Four.
You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's just after 9 o'clock and it's time for Drama on 3. As part of our season celebrating the 70th anniversary of the third programme, we bring you a dramatisation of an unpublished short story by Jo Orton, a playwright whose first ever commission was from the third programme. The Visa Affair has been adapted for radio by Jake Arnott and does include some strong language. It's introduced by Jake Arnott himself.
In 1965, the playwright Jo Orton visited the American Embassy to apply for a visa to visit New York. He wanted to attend the Broadway production of his first full-length play, Entertaining Mr. Sloan, but he had an unusual criminal conviction to explain. He wrote a short memoir called The Visa Affair, describing the Kafkaesque series of interviews and interrogations he encountered there. But this dark, funny, and very personal tale never saw the light of day. 50 years later, I was shown around the Orton archive at Leicester University by Professor Emma Parker and Joe's sister, Leonie. They told me about this unpublished work, and Leonie gave her permission for me to do something with it. I immediately saw all sorts of possibilities to adapt it into a full-length drama. The story runs only to 17 pages, but has all of the dramatic pace and tightly honed structure of Orton's best work. From the outset, I knew that I would keep Joe's original narrative intact, with any additions to the text incorporated within it, and that other documents would be used to form a collage, like the shocking collages he and his lover made from stolen library books. Then there were the scenes I had to write, because the Visa Affair in itself is incomplete. Orton could not tell the whole story to the American Embassy, nor to the British public of 1965. His relationship with Halliwell would have been seen as a greater offence than the theft and effacement of library books. I wanted to address this and to explore how their strange collaborations led to Joe's eventual success as a writer. I hope this adaptation does justice to Joe's original story and to the extraordinary crimes of passion that he and Halliwell committed.
The Eagle on the American Embassy building in Grosvenor Square is made of black metal. From even a small distance, it looks like a bat or a vulture about to sink upon its prey.
The Visa Affair.
Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway.
You want the 73. Get off by Selfridges and walk down Duke Street.
The hip, hooray and ballyhoo.
What is it?
I'm dreading this.
It'll be all right.
I'm just not good with petty authority.
You're excellent with petty authority. It's what you do well. Petty authority is your forte.
They're going to give me a hard time. You know that, don't you?
Well, that's hardly a surprise, is it? Not after what you did.
What we did.
Christ, don't bring me into it. That's not going to help, is it?
But it was your idea.
Everything was my idea, remember?
Yes. That's your genius.
My curse.
Our curse. Our genius. A genius like us.
It is your fault. You know, your fault I ever got into trouble.
Go and get your bus, Joe.
You're my angry muse, Ken.
Go on. You want to get there early.
Inside the visa section, there were three desks.
Morning, how are you?
At 9 o'clock, two men entered and occupied their desks. It was Monday morning. The men greeted each other, straightened their inkwells, and arranged fresh blotting paper on their pads. It was now 9:07. A woman entered and sat down at the third desk. She began to type. The two men smiled at the six people waiting for visas and asked who was first.
Who's first?
Of the six, three were Negroes, one was an Indian, one was a man with a beard, and the other was myself.
Have you been to the US before?
No.
And where will you be staying?
In New Jersey.
I wanted a visa to visit the United States for the New York production of Entertaining Mr. Sloan. I intended staying for 6 weeks.
How long are you planning to stay in the United States?
The other applicants were dealt with surprisingly quickly. My turn came. I gave my passport to the man at the first desk. He checked the photograph, looked at the visa form and told me to hand it to the woman at the third desk.
I just hand it to the woman at the third desk.
She took a number of details from the visa form and told me to go into the next room. The next room was lit by white fluorescent light. There were more desks in this room. Several doors led from the room. Behind each door was another room with a desk. I waited for 10 minutes until a man called me by name and asked me to step inside.
Mr. Orton, please step inside.
That's three you're taking out, then?
Yes.
And you, sir?
Just this one.
Right.
Here.
Thanks. There we are, then.
Thank you.
So what did you get?
Shush, not yet.
Come on, what's in the bag?
Oh, Mr. Orton.
Oh, shit.
Let's run for it.
No, just try and act natural.
Natural.
Mr. Orton, I quite forgot.
What is it?
Your order. It's arrived.
My order?
Yes. Edward Gibbon. The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire.
You thought we were done for.
Done for, indeed. You've certainly got an ear for cheap drama.
Imagine being nicked for stealing library books.
So, what did you get? Art of the Italian Renaissance.
Mm-hmm. See how we plunder. Beautiful, isn't it? Cool. All these plates, see? Caravaggio, Christ of the Column.
Il Flagellazione. Antitians noli mi tangere. Christ after the resurrection saying, don't touch me.
Wonderful. Oh, look at the Magdalene on her knees. I bet she had a job keeping her hands off him. It'll look great on your mural.
Our great work.
Our minor misdemeanor.
No. This is art, not theft. Look at that. That's part of our heritage, isn't it? It belongs to us.
Aren't we just stealing
No,
it?
We're making it ours. This is our culture, not theirs. We must reject the norms of society. Look at them all. All those norms norming about.
We must bite the hand that feeds us.
Yes, we must.
What did you get?
Here.
The Steel Cocoon by Bents Plagerman, a wartime adventure. What did you want to take this for?
Oh, we're going to put it back. Just once we played with it a bit.
Played with it?
Made our own contribution to popular literature.
I don't understand.
Wait till we get home.
John Kingsley Orton.
Yes?
Step inside, please. Take a seat.
He said.
He was a fat, dark man with a Spanish name.
Go on, take a seat.
I sat down. He stared hard at my visa form, and then at me.
I see you've been in prison.
Yes.
What for?
I braced myself for what was about to happen. It was always impossible to explain why I'd been jailed. I searched for the simplest and most truthful account of my case. Did you send it off? Your manuscript. To Faber and Faber, you said Charles Monteith was going to have a look at it.
Yes, I put it in the post yesterday.
He didn't like the boy hairdresser.
Well, if he doesn't like Priapus in the shrubbery, fuck him. Maybe my real talent lies in this direction.
Perhaps you should have gone to art school, not drama school.
Well, it's too late for that now. You know what James Joyce said?
What?
I am quite content to go down in posterity as a scissors and paste man.
What did he mean by that?
Collage. It's the essence of modernism and literature as well as art.
What are you doing to that book?
Well, we're not just going to steal from the library. We're going to give something back.
What?
Wait, I'll show you in a minute. How's Mr. Gibbon?
Well, he has something to say about libraries.
Really?
Yes. Listen to this. I should deceive the expectation of the reader if I passed in silence the fate of the Alexandrian Library, as it is described by the learned Abulpharagius.
Can you pass the glue? What's that?
Well, he's writing about when the Arabs sacked the Library of Alexandria. The volumes of paper and parchment were distributed to the 4,000 baths of the city. They used the books as fuel for their bathhouses.
Bathhouses. How marvellous.
And while Gibbon regrets the loss of great works committed to the flames, he implies that the Arabs were doing us a favour getting rid of some of the others. Listen, if the ponderous mass of Arian and Monophysite controversy were indeed consumed in the public baths, a philosopher may allow, with a smile, that it was ultimately devoted to the benefit of mankind.
Let me see. I sincerely regret the more valuable libraries which have been involved in the ruin of the Roman Empire. But when I seriously compute the lapse of ages, the waste of ignorance, and the calamities of war, our treasures, rather than our losses, are the objects of my surprise.
What an old queen Gibbon is. Send up, send up, send up the whole time.
You see, we are part of a tradition. We're purifying culture in our own way. Look. Our new cover for the Steel Cocoon.
Where did you get that?
An old copy of Physique Pictorial.
That's a very tight jockstrap he's wearing.
Nice package, though, isn't it?
Yes. I still don't understand. We're going to smuggle the book back on the shelves.
And see how the public react.
We could add text as well as pictures.
How?
See here. The plays of Emlyn Williams. These panels, where all his works are listed. Look, we could type up new ones and glue them in. Oh. What's the first one?
Night Must Fall.
Night Must Fall. Right. Yeah? Cut that out and see if it fits.
Knickers Must Fall. Yes, that'll do. Yes, it fits. Let's see the others. Up the front, up the back.
And the pièce de résistance.
Fact by Monty.
Oh, who's that?
Quick, hide all that. Just a moment! The other one.
Hello, Mr. Halliwell.
Miss Boynes, what an unexpected pleasure.
Oh, sorry. Am I interrupting?
No, we were just working.
Oh, another book?
Yes.
Oh, it's so inspiring living below such, well, artistic types as yourselves. I'm afraid some of the other residents in this house aren't so cultured.
Quite. So, what can we do for you, Miss Boynes?
Oh, I just wanted to introduce you to my new companion.
Good heavens, what have you got there? Is that a very small parrot?
Silly, it's a budgerigar.
Look, John, Miss Boynes has got a budgerigar.
They're meant to be very intelligent.
Well, he certainly has an intellectual look about him. Wouldn't you say, Kenneth?
Oh, definitely. Positively philosophical.
Ah. I am worried that Jenny might get lonely.
Jenny?
Well, that's what she's called. I think she might need a partner. What do you think?
Oh, perhaps. You wouldn't want her slipping into some slough of despair, would you?
Oh, no. But then you might have an existential crisis on your hands.
Yes. Oh, no, I wouldn't want that. Oh, well, she's got a nice piece of cuttlefish bone in the meantime. Well, I mustn't keep you from your work, and I need to settle this one into her new home, so come on.
Bye.
Bye.
I stole some books from a public library.
How many?
I'm not sure, really.
I looked out of the window and then looked back.
About 80?
Yet you were given a 6-month sentence.
He stared over the desk, throwing the ball into my court.
It was a practical joke.
I'll be frank with you. I can't allow you to have a visa for the United States unless you can produce the court reports of your case.
How can I do that? It was 3 years ago. I can't remember the date of my trial. I've 2 newspaper accounts, if that help.
Daily Mirror, 16th of May, 1962. The gorilla in the roses. Strange things began to happen to books borrowed from a public library. Old ladies found pictures of gorillas in books about roses. Mythology readers found passages from Edgar Wallace in the middle of chapters about Greek gods. Art lovers found that faces in reproductions of great paintings had been replaced by the faces of cats, birds, and frogs. Typewritten on the fly leaves of other books were suggestions that the author should be burnt at the stake. All these strange happenings worried the readers, the librarians, and the library committee at Islington, London. But stranger things were happening at a flat in Noel Road, Islington. An unusual wallpaper was going up in the bedroom and the bathroom. It was made up of 1,000 beautiful prints taken from library books. The prints were missed by librarians, and Detective Sergeant Harry the Hermit Hermitage was called in to work on his strangest case. His inquiries led him to the flat, the home of Kenneth Halliwell, 35, an invoice clerk, and John Alton, 29, a lens cleaner.
Press clippings are of no use here. Just go to the court where your trial took place. Ask them for the court records.
He gave me back my passport.
When you have them, come back here and tell the young lady at the third desk in the entrance hall that you have some documents. She will attend to you.
He turned his face away and I left him alone.
Ken?
Well? They want the court records.
Christ, do we have to go through that again?
No, I do. You don't have to worry about it.
Well, I do. It brings it all back.
Ken, please.
It was all right for you.
What do you mean?
You know!
What I'm anxious to see is that the decision of this court should make it abundantly clear to those who may be clever enough to write criticisms in other people's books, public library books, or to deface them or to ruin them in this way, are made to understand very clearly that this will be disastrous.
It was a disaster for me.
Well, it was hardly a walk in the park where I was concerned.
Yes, but
you can't claim a monopoly on suffering, you know.
Something changed.
Well, it was hard for me, too.
Yes, but it was where you learnt your precious detachment. Well,
And from then on, everything started to go right for you.
No, it
And everything
wasn't.
Started to go wrong for
Come
me.
Come on.
Well, it's true, isn't it?
No.
Your success and my failure.
It's not.
After all, I'm not the one on the way to Broadway, am I?
Well, neither am I.
What?
What? I mean, the way things are going, it's all buggered up. They might not let me go. They want the court records, Ken.
So you said.
So I'm a convicted criminal, just like you. That's all that matters to them.
Partners in crime.
Yes. Don't you ever forget it, because I won't.
Good.
Well, that's all right, then. Right?
Yeah.
It's just...
No, it's okay. What's that for?
We never expected it, did we?
Getting caught?
Success.
No. Now sit down, for God's sake, and I'll make tea.
What are we having?
I've got some haddock from the Essex Road.
I arrived at the Old Street Magistrates' Court at 9:55. At 10, the doors were opened. I had great difficulty in finding anyone who understood what court records were. A policeman said,
"What you want is the memorandum of conviction."
Oh, is that the court records of the case?
I've no idea. It's a memorandum of conviction. That's all we deal with here.
He took me to an office, handed me over to another man. I'd managed to remember the date of my trial by now. I told him I wanted a memorandum of conviction.
That'll be 2 shillings.
He gave me a searching look.
I'll just wait till I check the details, will you?
He shuffled away. When he returned, he had a dazed expression on his face. He leaned across the counter and lowered his voice to a whisper in order to spare my embarrassment.
When did he get out?
2 elderly women were standing nearby.
He needs the form. Why does he need
You know, of course, what you were in for far better than I.
I nodded, awed by his manner.
Oh, I do wish they'd hurry up.
Well...
He dropped his voice even lower. It was now all but impossible to hear him.
There were 7 charges, and they are down as separate. I can't do anything for you, I'm afraid.
Oh. Can't I have the memorandum?
Oh, yeah. But it'd look bad, you see. I don't know what you've told them, of course.
He was genuinely upset.
I cannot help you there, though. It's not within my jurisdiction.
When can I have the memorandum?
We'll post it.
He shook his head.
How much did you do?
6 months.
A first offence?
Yes. It was concurrent. He was about to ask something else, but the elderly women were getting impatient.
Get back, my friend.
Free?
Yes.
We'll post it as soon as possible.
He said, in a very formal way. I left the building and went home.
Senator Humphrey, as the government chief whip and member of the Foreign Relations Committee, what do you feel about this latest Soviet move?
Well, this is just another instance of the Soviet Union.
2 days later, the post brought a letter from the Old Street Magistrates' Court.
Oh, anything from Peggy? No.
I don't think anyone's going to pick up the option on Lou now.
John Kingsley Orton. You better open this one. The court records?
Yeah.
Inside, with the compliment of the clerk of the court, was a memorandum of conviction, entered into the register of the court on the 15th of May 1962. It listed 7 offences. 1, stealing 36 books valued at £23.
In some 30 years' experience as counsel for the prosecution, I have never seen anything of this nature before.
2, stealing 36 books valued at approximately £25.
For some reason, which seems not to be clear, the two men had not only stolen the books, but had caused the most extraordinary damage to them.
Three, unlawfully and maliciously causing damage to 18 books to an amount exceeding £5.
As probation officer on this case, it is my view that, in a sense, both defendants were frustrated authors. They have submitted various works, but so far none have been accepted.
Four, unlawfully and maliciously causing damage to 12 books to an amount exceeding £5.
Whatever remorse you might have shown to the court, I am most concerned about the malice shown in what you did.
Five, unlawfully and maliciously causing damage to 32 books to an amount exceeding £5.
Sheer malice towards fellow users of this library.
Six, willfully damaging a number of books by removing 113 plates therefrom to an approximate value of £10.
Who, until these books are replaced?
Seven, willfully damaging a number of books by removing 1,350 plates therefrom to an approximate value of £133.
Will be denied what they might reasonably be expected to enjoy.
All the books were property of Islington Borough Council. The adjudication was 6 months' imprisonment on the first five charges and a £2 fine, or 1 month's imprisonment for the last two. Hello, Peggy?
Joe, whatever's the matter?
Nothing's the matter. I just wanted to know what's happening with Loot.
Well, we're still waiting to hear from the Royal Court. Where are you?
Grosvenor Square.
What are you doing there?
Never mind. I just want to be sure that you're still pushing it.
Of course I'm still pushing it, darling.
It's just that everyone seems to have lost faith in it.
Darling, Sloan will be on Broadway in 2 months' time. I don't think anyone's losing faith in you. Just think what fun you can have out there.
Well, that's just it, you see?
What?
I'm having a bit of trouble.
What have you gone and done now?
Well, it's just the visa to go to the States.
The visa?
Yeah, they're making a fuss about the prison sentence.
Oh.
Yeah, they've been quite shitty about it, to tell you the truth.
You've been to see them?
That's what I'm doing in Grosvenor Square.
Oh, well, be on your best behaviour. You know how Americans are.
Oh, for God's sake, Peggy, what do you think I'd be like?
Well, I don't know, dear. Look, maybe I should talk to someone.
No.
What?
What I want you to do is get Loot on in London.
But you really should go to America,
oh,
darling.
Fuck America!
Well, I wouldn't express that opinion quite so vehemently with the embassy staff if I were you.
Peggy.
I can intercede on your behalf, you know. I am your agent.
Yes, but...
As I said, I could talk to someone...
Look, I'm perfectly capable of dealing with this myself. Oh, shit. The Roosevelt statue looked particularly benevolent as I walked past it the next morning.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
But the eagle on the building ahead, under a lowering sky, looked more than ever like a great bat about to take off on some errand of menace. The three desks in the entrance hall were occupied. The number of people waiting attention was about 15. I went to the woman at the third desk and said, "I've got some documents." She gave a toss of her head.
"Don't come to me."
The fury of the woman was unbelievable.
I am not the one to see.
Oh, I was told to come to you with these documents. I shoved them towards her. She made a snatch at them. As they'd cost a lot of time and effort to get, I wasn't letting them out of my hands. I pulled them back.
See the first desk.
The man at the first desk smiled as I came over. I explained that I'd been told to give them to the woman at the third desk.
Yes.
He nodded his head in a sympathetic way, as though he'd had trouble like this from her before. He looked the memorandum over and took them to the woman. She glanced at them, gave a pert toss of her head, and said something in an undertone.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Come with me, sir.
He led me into the second room. I sat down.
I'll get someone to deal with you in one moment.
Yeah, thank you. He disappeared with my passport. Short while later, a voice called my name.
Mr. Orton.
A man was beside me.
Come with me.
He led me past five blonde secretaries.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
Hi.
Down a corridor, along another corridor,
morning.
Into his office. He was of medium height. He wore a grey suit. He had a pale face. His lips were clamped together as though to prevent liquid from seeping between them.
Sit down.
His eyes held no smile in them.
Pull up a chair.
I dragged one from the wall and brought it close to his desk. He hunched himself over my passport, my visa application form, and my memorandum of conviction. His eyes darted from one to the other. Finally, he looked up, sat back, a bewildered expression on his face.
What's all this about?
I didn't know how to answer. I said nothing. He sat up in his chair, stiff and upright. His eyes narrowed.
Can you explain what this,
he pointed to the memorandum,
is all about?
It was a joke. This wasn't true. The outrages against a middle-brow reading public were serious enough. They'd occupied my time and energies for close on 5 years before I was caught. They could never be justified or explained.
Inspiration.
What?
An intake of breath. That's what it means.
An aspiration?
The out breath. A waste of breath.
Are you disappointed?
Well, that they turned out my novel. Not really.
Charles Monteith of Faber and Faber. He's a silly old queen.
I told him in my covering letter that it would not be in the logic of things for us to have any success. We live too pleasantly in our own peculiar way.
I hope you didn't tell him we were happy.
Of course not. But I wanted him to know we wouldn't want it any other way.
No?
No. That we get such pleasure from our own savage laughter.
I suppose. Well, he wouldn't get that.
And he certainly didn't get my novel, not even the title.
I'm not sure if I do. What is the Priapus in the Shrubbery?
It's a T.S. Eliot reference, and of the Priapus in the Shrubbery, gaping at the lady in the swing, I thought he'd get that, him being a Faber.
I really thought we had a chance with the boy hairdresser.
Yes, I thought we were onto something there.
Do you think we'll write something together again?
I don't know. Seemed that was as far as we could go in that direction.
Well, I don't know why we bothered with Monteith. He never got our last days of Sodom either.
Never got the joke.
I'm afraid we're too dubious about its potential sales. It's such a rarefied joke.
Silly old queen. Out there, that's the joke. It's all around us. Beauty, civilization, culture, the universe. That's the fucking joke.
And who's laughing?
Conspire.
What?
To breathe with. That's what it means.
junk.
He screeched the word quietly.
The authorities don't seem to have regarded it as a joke.
No.
I may as well tell you, Mr. Orden, that your visa will be automatically refused. That is the law. Your actions, you see, resulted in the damaging of other people's property. And that counts with us as moral turpitude.
He paused to let the full weight of his words sink in.
However, you can apply for a temporary waiver of ineligibility. In order to do this, you must convince a consular officer that you are a deserving case. Do you wish to make an application?
Yes.
I'm a policeman, and I must warn you that I have ways of checking your statements. If you make false ones, that will be another reason why we shouldn't issue a waiver of ineligibility.
Yes.
I've been through this before. I knew that the thing was to be polite. I didn't think he had the power to beat me up, but you never know.
I wouldn't make false statements.
Tell me what this case was about.
I used to remove books from public libraries and substitute pictures of my own choosing for the photographs of the authors on the back. Then I'd smuggle the books back into the library again.
What? He leapt up in panic.
Well, how do you mean? I don't understand.
I once pasted a picture of a tattooed man over the photograph of John Betjeman, the famous poet.
A poet?
He considered the matter carefully.
People taking down Betjeman's book, I think it was summoned by bells, were considerably surprised by the author, whom they'd often seen and admired on their TV screens.
He said nothing, staring at the court memorandum as though it would explain the case in language he could understand.
And then, you see, I pasted the picture of a female nude over the author's photo on a book by a well-known titled woman. It was on etiquette.
A light appeared in his eyes. At last he understood.
Was there pornography involved in the case?
No. I'd cut the nude from another book in the library.
Are you a homosexual?
No. Also, the room in which I lived was papered from floor to ceiling with pictures. And the doors. And...
another Madonna for the altarpiece. Here, I think. Silly tart, looking like butter wouldn't melt in her mouth.
It's nearly finished.
Oh, I don't think our masterpiece will ever be finished.
Your masterpiece.
What?
Your masterpiece. You did most of the work on the mural.
Yes, but it's ours. Our great exhibition, our gallery, our theatre.
Well, you've covered everywhere.
Except the ceiling.
That could be your fucking Sistine Chapel.
Our fucking Sistine Chapel. What's the matter?
It's just this wretched novel. It's not working. It's just a stupid fantasy.
No, it's not. A man lost in the body of a giant is a wonderful image. Absurd, but wonderful.
I don't mean that. I mean this.
What?
This. This whole thing's a fantasy. A mad dream.
What do you mean?
You know. Oh, this. I don't want to be stuck here forever. I want to get somewhere. It's like the walls are closing in, and sometimes all that artwork doesn't help, you know?
Yes.
I mean, you can't always fit a cathedral into a bedsit. You know? I'm going out.
Well, perhaps it's time for some extramural activity. You want company?
I just need a bit of time on my own. Thought I'd go up to the Central Library on Holloway Road.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, well, they have a better selection of books.
They do indeed.
Yeah.
And it's convenient.
Well,
So close to the public toilets by the tube station.
Look, Ken.
Come on, don't be so coy. I don't mind, you know.
No.
Not about that.
It's just...
Oh, for goodness sake, I introduced you to sodomy.
Well...
Taught you all those Greek ideals.
There was that man in the cinema in Leicester.
Quite. What I mean is, why should I care if you go and get your cock sucked in the Holloway Road cottage?
Ken.
It's all part of the Dionysian spirit, isn't it? I'm not jealous.
No?
No. Not of that. Might be envious.
Envious?
Yes, you have an immediate sense, something urgent about you I always found attractive. I tend to live in the past. I mean, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is... But I'm not jealous. But...
What?
Look, I don't expect you to be faithful. Christ, he wants to live on faith.
You want loyalty?
Yes.
Well, you'll always have that.
It's something higher. Don't laugh.
I'm not.
Our work, our art.
What?
This...
Yes.
Our academy, our conspiracy, our genius. Well, you know what I mean. I don't mind you trolling around a bit. Besides, we should use all the municipal amenities for our own ends. Just as the noble Arabs used libraries to fuel the bathhouses of Alexandria. This is how we create our own culture. This is how we take our revenge on society.
But is it enough?
What?
Nothing. I'll see you later.
See if you can get us a nice bit of ham on your way back.
Would you mind seeing a doctor?
Why?
You forced me to be blunt. You may have a psychopathic personality. This is a very... very disturbing case.
I don't mind seeing a doctor.
Good. Now, I want you to fill in this form. Now, when do you want to go to New York City?
On the 2nd of September. The director wants me to discuss the play with him before rehearsals begin. I dropped the name Alan Schneider, along with Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. I didn't think he'd heard of either. He certainly hadn't heard of entertaining Mr. Sloane. Just as well, I suppose.
I can't have your waiver of ineligibility ready for the 2nd of September. We'll try for the 20th, shall we?
Yes.
Now you go out there and fill out that form. I've got a lot of paperwork to do.
As I left the room, the secretary hurried in with his coffee.
Your coffee, sir.
I waited in the entrance hall. I spread the form out and studied it. It was worse than I'd expected.
Name any clubs or organizations to which you have belonged since the age of 16. What is your itinerary? Name and addresses of your residences since the age of 16, with the length of stay in each. Have you ever traveled through a communist country?
That was the easiest. I completed the form and waited. The man at the first desk rang through and said I was ready. I went past the secretaries and found the man at his desk. He didn't say anything. I gave him the form.
You've never belonged to any clubs? Never joined anything?
No.
Well, not even the Boy Scouts.
A pink flush appeared on his cheeks. No.
Let's go talk to the doctor.
Downstairs, the hall was full of women and children.
The doctor will see you in a few minutes. Here's your passport. Also, by law, I'm required to furnish you with a written reason why a visa cannot be issued. Here it is.
He gave me a sheet of paper and left. While I waited to see the doctor, I studied the document with the arms of the United States at the top. It said...
This office regrets to inform you that it is unable to issue you with a visa because you have been found ineligible under the following section of the Immigration and Nationality Act. As amended, only checked items apply in your case.
There were three sections.
Section 212A, open brackets, 15, close brackets, which prohibits the issuance of a visa to anyone likely to become a public charge.
This wasn't checked.
Section 101A, open brackets, 15, close brackets, which prohibits the issuance of a temporary visitor's visa to applicants who fail to establish they are non-immigrants under the terms of the law.
This wasn't checked. The rest of the paper was blank, and then I saw a check. There was no explanation beside it, just the figures.
Section 212A, open brackets, 9, close brackets.
Written in longhand, nothing else. While I was... thinking this over, a nurse appeared.
Mr. Orton.
I went into a comfortably furnished room and shut the door. A tall, elderly man sprang to his feet.
Ah, I'm Dr. Osborne. Please sit down.
Mm-hmm. It escaped his notice, though not mine, that he sat on the couch while I sat at the desk.
Now, young man, tell me what all this is about.
I went over the same ground. This time I remembered a biography of Sir Bernard Spilsbury in which I'd switched many of the illustrations. Over the caption, "Remains discovered in the cellar," I'd pasted a photograph of the David painting showing Marat bleeding in his bath.
But what was it for?
It was a joke. I don't do it anymore.
Well, it does. You know, it doesn't seem funny to me.
It was reported in the Daily Mirror and Reader's Digest. I wasn't particularly proud of this. It was more for something to say. The doctor nodded. His eyes held a wary expression.
It was in the press.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So you got 6 months in an institution for this?
Yes.
Well, there must have been something else.
He leaned forward, his neck sticking out from his shirt.
What?
I used to write false blurbs on the inside of the book jackets. The writing I did was exactly the same as the writing I do now. I used to type quite long pieces. Many people borrowed the book from the library on the strength of my blurbs and returned them with complaints when the published story didn't live up to mine.
Orton, can you hold this cage while I open the door?
Oh, it's a lovely day.
Oh, you've been out?
To the library.
Oh, such a studious young man. Soon you'll be as well read as Mr. Halliwell. Have you seen my new friend?
Your Budgerigar? Oh, yes, you showed it to us.
Oh, no, silly. That was Jenny. No, this is Sweep. Here.
Oh.
He's quite different from Jen.
Yes? Oh, yes, of course. Well, he certainly doesn't chirp as much as the other one.
Oh, quite different temperaments, you see. Sweep isn't much of a talker, but he's a good listener.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. He understands every word I say. Of course, they don't get on.
Sorry?
Sweep and Jen, they were quite at each other's throats when I put them in together.
Oh, dear.
Yes. It's shocking how vicious they can be amongst themselves, given half a chance. There would have been carnage had I not interceded.
Carnage?
Sheer carnage, Mr. Orton. Yes, blood and feathers everywhere. Only one thing for it.
What?
Separate cages.
Separate cages?
Yes.
Oh, what luxury.
Sorry?
Nothing. Well, I must get upstairs, Miss Boynes.
Oh, maybe Mr. Halliwell would like to see Sweep?
Maybe. Maybe later. I warn you, Miss Boynes is determined to show you her new budgerigar.
Christ. What does it look like?
Well, it's a fat little thing. Yellow.
Yellow?
Yes. What's that? Titus Andronicus. You know, that's rather good. The banquet scene is perfect.
Why, there they are, both baked in that pie, whereof their own mother daintily hath fed, eating the flesh she herself hath bred.
Mm, of course. And what's that in the background?
It's Goya's Saturn devouring his children.
Wonderful. Wait, you've put back the name of the editor as well as the title.
Well, credit where credit is due. We don't always have to be on the attack, you know. We might adorn great art just as we denigrate trash. Speaking of which, what did you get? Dorothy L. Sayers, one of her favourite Lord Peter detective novels. Clouds of Witness, Gaudy Night. They're just plain yellow covers. What are we going to do with these?
Ah, well, you see the flaps on the inside? If we take the whole jacket out of its plastic cover... Yep, pass me Gaudy Night. You see the blurb there? Hmm? It's cheap, typewritten copy. Pass me the scissors. If we cut along the edge...
Then reverse the flap.
You've got a blank space for a round blow.
Yes, then we can slip it back under the plastic.
And nobody will tell the difference.
Well, not at first, but once they start reading... Here, we can type straight onto the cut flap. Mrs. Enriquez, an elderly bird watcher, observes through her very powerful field glasses the rape of Janet Ulish. It strikes her as the work of an accomplished master. When Janet becomes pregnant, Mrs. Enriquez accepts responsibility, though she knows that Janet has been deflowered by her own dear son, Baldwin. When Baldwin begins to appear at breakfast, dressed in the cast-off clothing of Janet Ulish, Mrs. Enriquez feels the time has come to call in Lord Peter Whimsy.
Lord Peter and Nitabar, his old Arab manservant, decide to beard Baldwin in Transvestite Den.
Transvestite Den?
Yes, it's a nightclub for cross-dressers.
Okay.
It transpires as the 10-year-old boy, dressed in neat black frock and stockingette cap, tells his story that Lord Peter and his manservant are up against a fiendish plot to drive Mrs. Enriquez mad. In the car on the way back from the infamous transvestite den, Lord Peter unaccountably feels the call of nature. Stopping the car, he steps behind a large and convenient bush and wets the new-mown grass. When he returns to the Packard, we see that Nitabar is... Well, read the book yourself.
This is D.L. Sayers at her most awe-inspiring, at her most queer, and needless to say, at her most crude! Exclamation mark. Right, let's slip it back under the plastic with the rest of the cover. There, Goldie Knight. Oh, that'll be Miss Boynes.
I'll go. These wretched butchery dolls.
Kenneth Leith Halliwell?
Yes?
Detective Sergeant Hermitage. This is Detective Constable Gray. We have a warrant to search your flat, as we have reason to believe you are in possession of a number of stolen library books.
Oh, dear. Well, you'd better come in, then.
It was a more limited public than my present one. But the standard of writing was the same.
Well, it's still going on.
He half rose from the couch. I thought he was about to call for help. No, no. I'm talking about my plays.
I don't know what they want me to do with this case. Have you received any treatment?
Only in Brixton. I was on remand for medical or mental reports.
So you discovered the body?
Yes. I came down to breakfast, and there he was, lying on the kitchen floor with his head in the gas oven.
And how did you react?
I stepped over him and turned the gas off.
Would you say you were close to your father?
Not particularly.
And your mother?
She died when I was 11. A wasp stung her, and she had this allergic reaction. Her tongue swelled up, and she choked to death.
That must have been quite a trauma for you.
Yes. Oh, death, where is thy sting? Bloody wasp.
Do you say there was a history of mental illness in your family?
All history is the history of mental illness.
Quite. Do you ever get depressed, Mr. Halliwell?
Doesn't everybody?
I mean severe depression, clinical depression.
Sometimes.
Do you ever have suicidal thoughts?
Occasionally.
Are you a homosexual?
Goodness, you don't beat about the bush, do you?
Are you a homosexual, Mr. Halliwell?
No.
Yes.
And Mr. Orton?
Well, you'll have to ask him that.
What is your opinion?
What does that matter?
You lived together, you confided in each other, you committed these crimes together, surely you must know.
Am I my brother's keeper?
We rather think you are. Yes.
You saw a psychiatrist in prison?
Yes.
How often?
Once, for about 10 minutes.
What happened to you then?
I was sent back to the cells. I was in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day.
He brushed aside a foreign country's attempt to rehabilitate me with a curt gesture and strode into the outer office.
I want the report of the prison psychiatrist on this young man's case. Will you see to that for me?
Yes, Dr. Osborne.
U.S. Public Health Service, American Embassy, London W1, August 19th, 1965. To the Governor, H.M. Prison, Brixton, Jebb Avenue, London, SW2. Dear Sir, re John Kingsley Orton, the above-named applicant for an American visa, tells us that he was on remand at Brixton for 2 weeks during the beginning of May 1962, prior to his trial on a charge of stealing and defacing books. Sometime during the period on remand, he was examined by a psychiatrist. In evaluating his application for a visa, it would be helpful for us to have the report of the psychiatrists who saw him. I attach Mr. Orton's written consent to the disclosure of this information. Sincerely yours, Arthur S. Osborne, Medical Officer in Charge, U.S. Public Health Service.
I, John Orton, hereby consent to the transmittal of my case notes as requested by the Medical Officer in Charge, U.S. Public Health Service, American Embassy, 1 Grosvenor Square, London, W1. Signature.
Confidential. H.M. Prison, Brixton. Number 4365. Surname, Orton. Christian names, John Kingsley. Medical report. I have examined and interviewed the above-named and submit the following report as requested by the court. He is in good physical health. He gives a clear and relevant history and shows no sign of mental illness or subnormality. He is a rather effeminate type of individual, but vehemently denies any homosexual tendencies. He is evasive in discussing his relationship with Halliwell. In my opinion, he is an inadequate type of personality. I have no medical recommendations. James Leonard, Medical Officer.
Dear John, I really do not know how to begin this letter, for it has been such a long time since I wrote, and you've done such a stupid thing to land yourself where you are. Still, it's no use crying over spilt milk. It's over with now. It was the most curious thing that I learned about it. I generally take the Daily Mirror. This day I brought it home from work. Marilyn, Leonie and Mam had read it. They'd all gone to bed. I was watching a play or some on telly and happened to pick up the Mirror while the adverts were on. Looked at the headline, which read, "A Gorilla Among the Roses." Well, naturally, I thought it were about gardening. Then I got the shock. And your mum nearly went crackers for a day or two worrying about you. And then we got your letter. I don't understand why you done it. They should have known you were bound to get caught in the end. Still, it could have been a lot worse. I don't think I put you in the criminal class, but for goodness sake, John, when you get back to your flat, pack your Greek models, wherever you call them, and find a new hobby. Regarding home news, everything is about as usual. Leonie is engaged, as you know. Marilyn is still at home. Ray Thompson's wife, Cora Sonny, wishes to be remembered to you. Well, John, I think that's about all this time, as it's time to start work. I hope I shall soon be writing your own address on the envelope. Cheerio, John, and no more foolish acts. Love from all at home.
Mr. Helliwell.
Hello, Miss Boynes.
You're back.
Yes.
A free man.
Indeed.
Isn't Mr. Orton with you?
No.
No?
No, he'll be coming back from a different place. We were in separate prisons, you see.
Oh, I see. Separate prisons, yes. Of course.
Yes.
So you haven't seen each other for all this time?
No. I believe you have the keys I sent to Mr. and Mrs. Corden?
Oh, yes. Yes, they're down at Holland-on-Sea for the weekend. And they left them here. Now, here we are. Oh, and she bought the groceries you wrote and asked for. She gave me the list. Here we are. Half a dozen eggs, pound of sugar, half a pound of Kraft margarine, large sliced loaf, a jar of Rose's lime marmalade, and a jar of Maxwell House coffee. She left them in your kitchen.
That's very thoughtful of her. And thank you for looking after the keys.
Oh, don't mention it. Mr. Halliwell, forgive me if I speak plainly. I just want you to be certain that there are no bad feelings on your return to this house. I believe I speak for all the residents. Of course, we cannot condone what you and Mr. Orton did. It was such a shock with all the press reports and what have you. But now that you have both been rightly and justly punished, we only hope that you've learnt your lesson and we can help you make a fresh start. That's all of us, from all the flats here. Mr. and Mrs. Corden, Miss Clark and myself.
Thank you.
And Sweepin, Jen, of course.
Of course.
Yes.
What's the matter?
Nothing.
You've been sitting on the bed all day.
So? You've been busy.
What?
I said you've been busy.
Yes.
What is it?
What?
I said what is
it? It's a play.
Play?
Yes. Second draft. I'd like to know what you think.
A play?
Yeah, the novel just wasn't working, not for me. With this, I can strip everything back.
You're calling it The Boy Hairdresser?
No, it's a working title. I did borrow a little from our book.
You've borrowed a bit from Harold Pinter, too. No harm in that.
Well,
you want to steal rather than borrow, though. Cover your tracks.
Yes, you're right. You know, I think being a convicted thief will do wonders for my prose style.
Really?
Yes, I just don't care so much anymore. Don't you feel it? That sense of detachment you get from being locked away for all that time?
It was Ford Open Prison. It was hardly Alcatraz.
Yes, but it's given me an edge.
I'm afraid it's rather blunted me. Well, this is good. Yes, very good.
I sent a draft to the BBC Third Programme. They want me to rewrite it, but they're interested. They suggested an agent, someone called Peggy Ramsey.
That's great.
Oh, cheer up, Ken. You said yourself prison wasn't that bad.
That's just it. Prison wasn't the problem. In prison, at least, there's something to look forward to. Release date. Such a lovely phrase. Then you come out and realise there's no such thing.
Look, why don't I get out of your way while you finish reading that?
You're going out?
You want me looking over your shoulder, and I really do want to know what you think.
Where are you going?
Yeah, you know, just out for a walk. I'll be back in an hour or so.
And so the gods' distinction drew. Good luck to art, a sod to you.
Miss Boynes?
Oh, Mr. Orton.
Whatever's the matter?
There's been an accident. Mr. Halliwell. We had to call an ambulance.
Where did they take him?
To hospital, of course.
Yes, but which one?
St. Bart's, they said. Yes. St. Bartholomew's. Oh, dear.
I botched it.
What?
I should have made a better job of it.
Oh, no, don't say that.
Why not? Look, this wasn't a cry for help, you know.
I didn't say it was.
Maybe it was a warning.
What?
Yeah, sometimes a ship in trouble will give a distress signal. Other times it might fly the yellow flag of plague.
What are you talking about?
It means keep away. It means danger on board. You're better off without me.
Oh.
Look, I'm not the menace to society I once thought I was. Just a danger to myself and those around me, so... What's the point?
You'll get through this.
Will I?
Yes.
So soldier on through my suffering, will I?
Please, Ken.
Well, you don't believe that crap, do you? Why should I?
It's just...
In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud.
Please.
Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Fuck that. Well, you think I can't just give up?
I don't know.
Come on, give me one good reason to carry on.
Okay. I'll tell you why.
Mr. Halliwell?
Yes?
I've got your medication.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
Much better, thank you. I was just quoting from Invictus by W.E. Henley to my friend here.
A poem?
Yes, Mr. Henley wrote it in hospital. He'd just had one of his legs cut off.
Oh.
Yes, but he showed a stirring spirit through it all. Mm. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
Well, that's lovely.
Isn't it? A remarkable man. Ended up being the inspiration for Long John Silver.
Really? Well, if you need anything, just ring.
You are a wicked bastard.
Actually, Henley's not all that bad in places. He knew something of life. And death, of course.
So, you wanted to know why you should carry on.
And he was the inspiration for Long John Silver. He was Robert Louis Stevenson's editor.
I'll tell you why.
He wrote this wonderful poem about a tart in a room with their ponts outside on the stairs.
Just listen, will you?
Madam Life's a piece
Shut
in bloom.
Up. Just be quiet for a minute, will you?
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. You should go on living.
Why?
Because I still need you. Mm-hmm. Do you hear me?
Yes.
So?
So? Better stick around for a while then.
Right.
So? Madam Life's a piece in bloom. Mm-hmm. Piece in bloom, that's a blousy tart, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Life's a piece in bloom. Death goes dogging everywhere. She's the tenant of the room, he's the ruffian on the stair.
The ruffian on the stair?
He's the pimp, you see, living off of moral earnings.
Well, that's what death does.
Yeah. Death's the pimp, and life's the whore.
Isn't that the truth?
I'll see you again. Perhaps some other time then, young man.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning to you.
He couldn't conceal his relief. After signing another form authorizing them to check my records, I left the building. I couldn't hope to get to the United States on my own. I needed help. So I went to tell my agent what happened.
They don't even give a clear reason why they won't issue a visa.
Hmm.
See? At the bottom there. Section 2129A in longhand.
Yes.
It's blank.
They've ticked the box next to it, but it's blank.
How strange. What did they say?
Oh, they mentioned something about moral turpitude.
Oh, wonderful.
And then there were all these questions and documents they wanted. I'm exhausted.
I did say come to me.
I know.
I mean, this is all far too like one of your plays.
Poetic justice, I suppose.
Oh, no, I'm not having that.
What?
Poetic justice, indeed. There's no commission in that, darling. No, poets should always get away with it. It's time to pull a few strings. Leave that for now, Tessa. And take a letter. So, what's the name of this officious yank? John H. Moore. Right. Tessa! From Peggy Ramsey, 19th of August, 1965. To John H. Moore, Esquire, Embassy of the United States of America, Visa Section 1, Upper Grosvenor Street, London West 1. Dear Mr. Moore, my client, John Kingsley Orton, whose name as a playwright is Joe Orton, has brought me your letter informing me that you are unable to issue him a visa to visit America. I think perhaps we should have approached you ourselves in the first place to explain the nature of Joe Orton's visit. But I will explain this now. Joe came to see me as a client at the end of 1963. And since then, he has written two radio plays, which have been bought by the BBC, a television play, which has been bought by Associated Television, and two theatrical plays, both of which have been performed in England. Entertaining Mr. Sloane, his first stage play, opened in London at the Arts Theatre on the 6th of May 1964, and it ran for nearly a year in the West End of London, earning him considerable monies. We have sold the play to many countries in the world, including the United States. The United States is presenting this play on Broadway in October, and the play actually opens out of town a week or two earlier. The director is Alan Schneider, who directed Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, both in America and in London. It is vitally important that Joe is available to discuss the play fully with Alan Schneider in September, and the American management is paying his round trip there.
Come on! It's a great view from up here.
Christ.
There. See?
Yeah. Wow. London can look quite splendid from a distance.
You should get out more, you know.
I get out all the time.
Yes, in the countryside, I mean. You'd be content just to walk up and down the Holloway Road until your balls dropped off.
You spend more time indoors than I do.
Yes, well, maybe we both need a bit of fresh air.
Yeah. Remember what that friend of Charles Monteith said about the flat?
Like some extraordinary tomb.
A decorated sarcophagus.
I rather like that.
Yeah, well, you would.
Well, all art is a meditation on death, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it is. But you're right. We should get out more.
Yeah.
Live a little.
Old Davey.
I caught a 73 bus.
Then they go to Bedfordshire.
Bedfordshire?
Yeah, they start a mining operation there.
In Bedfordshire?
Yeah, drilling through the Earth's crust they are. Planning to turn the world into a gigantic spaceship.
Fancy that.
Behind me, two women were discussing Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Very far-fetched. I like something you can believe in.
Yes. You know where you are with human beings, don't you?
Yeah.
Visa Affair by Joe Orton was adapted for radio by Jake Arnott. Additional material was contributed by Leonie Orton. Joe Orton was played by Russell Tovey. Ken Halliwell by Tom Burke. Miss Boynes by Alison Steadman. And Peggy Ramsey by Frances Barber. All the other roles were played by Nigel Anthony, Stephen Critchlow, Kerry Shale, and members of the company. The Visa Affair was directed by Marilyn Imrie, produced by Joe Coombs, and is a Loftus production for BBC Radio 3.
And don't forget, you can find all our recent dramas on the Radio 3 website. Our next drama on 3 is Vampire Man by Joseph O'Connor, about the friendship between Bram Stoker and his muse Henry Irving, the inspiration for Count Dracula. That's at 9 o'clock next Sunday night.
70th season on BBC Radio 3.
Having been brought up more on the idea of film editing and montage, I don't like things to be where you expect them to be. I'd learnt that from Alfred Hitchcock.
In his 70th year, the composer Michael Finnessy reflects on a life in music.
I don't think I know any more now about the piece that I'm going to write next than I would have done when I was 18, 20, because each work is a new challenge.
Music and conversation, as Michael Finnessy talks to Robert Warby in Here and Now, on BBC Radio 3 next Saturday night at 10 o'clock. Well, now on Radio 3, it's 10:15, and it's time for this week's edition of Early Music Late with Aileen Manahan-Thomas.
Hello and welcome to Early Music Late, our weekly dip into Baroque music-making across Europe. Today we're taking a trip to one of Germany's most famous festivals, in Schleswig-Holstein, to hear Ensemble 1700 with wind soloists Michael Schmidt-Kastorf and Dorothee Oberlinger, the group's director. The focus is on music for the transverse flute and the recorder, and the first piece can be performed by either of these instruments. This flute or recorder concerto by Johann Friedrich Fasch was only discovered a few years ago in the New York Public Library, and it had been languishing for the previous centuries under the title Concerto in D Minor by Rasch. It's now been brought firmly into Fasch's output, and here it is played by Ensemble 1700 with their director and soloist Dorothee Oberlinger.